Welcome to the You Unleashed podcast with Femi Akinyemi, the podcast focused on helping you unleash your best personally and professionally. In these sessions, I sit down with some amazing professionals and high achievers and experts in their various fields, and we try to break down how they achieved or became successful. And in doing so, I help you deconstruct some of these practical tools and tips, and hopefully you can run with them. You know what I usually say? I am a believer that done is better than perfect. So in whatever it is you do, just start. Take some of these tips, apply them, run with them, and be amazed how much of an impact it has on you personally. Now, this 6-week session, I have an amazing, amazing guest. It's no secret that a lot of us are working in jobs that sometimes we don't necessarily love or are passionate about, but it pays the bills. And it also makes sense for some of us that we are currently not working in areas that maximize our strengths. But the reality is, when you play to your strengths, you are in flow. And when you are in flow, you are the best version of yourself. And when you are the best version of yourself, you are unleashed. And those are the moments when you can do absolutely anything. And that brings me to today's guest, Rene Carvalho. The first time I heard Rene speak, I must say I was captivated and I was inspired. Rene is not just one of the world's leading executive coaches who just works with some of the top Fortune 500 teams, but he has also himself been a chairman, a CEO, and an MD of a blue chip company. Rene specializes in delivering unforgettable and unmissable performances that show precisely how contemporary inspired leadership can electrify an audience to an authentic and powerful emotional connection. And he does this by drawing on his own personal experiences. Look, guys, if you're looking for an academic, a clever one, who will read out well-crafted speech on the theory about thought leadership, this ain't it. Because with Rene, you've got a down-to-earth, experienced coach who has been there and done that. And he's got the t-shirt. And he's even written a book called Spike that is all about leading the strength-based revolution. It's not just a business self-help book. It's a journey of self-discovery. I've read it and I can testify that it's a great book. Rene's worked with some of the world's best leaders, prime ministers like David Cameron, business leaders like Richard Branson, and even Nelson Mandela. And he also shares his Spike philosophy. But it was so great to have Rene on this session. He shared his personal story as a migrant, coming to this country and the United Kingdom and making his own way, all the way from Africa. He shared some of his tips for how to become the best you can be. And you'd be amazed at some of the really simple things he shares. I left there feeling empowered, changed, and just a bit more clear about how to implement my strengths and make the most of it. Listen, guys, you really want to grab a notepad and listen. And I must say, it's quite an enjoyable session as well. You'd be amazed where the time all goes. Grab a note, grab a drink, and enjoy. And hopefully, you leave this session feeling just as changed as I did. Enjoy. And Rene, thank you for coming. Welcome.
It's my pleasure. It's a privilege to be here, Femi.
Thank you so much. One of the things that struck me very quickly was when I was reading Spike. And to be honest, for a long time, I thought, what is Spike? And it was on the cover. It's just there, right underneath Spike. And I went, oh, that's what it means. So the question I had very quickly was, you're a migrant. You came to the shores of Britain a while ago. And one of the things you said very quickly was, for a lot of us who are migrants, we have this subservient mentality, almost because we grew up in the colonial era. And in a way, I agree with you, because it's stifled a lot of us. It's caused us to not become who we really should be or fulfill our best talents. We've ended up putting ourselves in boxes. I mean, speak to that a bit. How do you see this phenomenon, really?
Like many, many of the immigrants who came from the British Empire. My parents were middle class in Gambia. They grew up being, they would not have known anything but middle class. The large house, sending their kids to the best school, having some people working, the housekeepers working the house, etc., etc., etc. And my father was well educated, and the expectations of his parents were high. But they had a dream. They were the rebellious younger generation which we experience today. They were the Generation Z of their era. And they knew that they had been through primary education. They'd been through secondary education. But Gambia at the time, a nation of 1.5 million people, there were no universities. There was no further education. None whatsoever. So therefore, they decided they're going to pick up everything they've got and they're going to the mother country. And in those days, it was seen as the mother country.
Oh, yeah.
It could do no wrong.
HQ, headquarters, isn't it?
And it was nearly heaven. And if you could summon the means to get there and partake there, be educated there, get a great job there, you'd come back as someone extremely special. And their dream was the diaspora dream, that they were going to get their kids educated. They were going to get them to university. And a British university? Come back to Gambia and you will be the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. We all had that dream. And even when you go back, I've been privileged enough to work right across Africa. And a lot of it is the former British colonies and the French colonies. They're identical. You go to Zambia, you've been to Zimbabwe. You go to Zimbabwe, you've been to Botswana. You go to Botswana, you've been to Nigeria. You go to Nigeria, you've been to Ghana. And they all have the similar foundations, the similar infrastructure, and let me share this, the similar class structure, where people love to look down on someone else. There's always someone beneath you. Work hard, we're going to sacrifice everything to get you to the best schools and the best education. And we still see this today across Africa. There is nothing wrong with education, but schools don't teach you everything. University doesn't teach you everything. There's a lot more we can learn along the way. Yeah. And I always ask the question, and it's the question for you and for your listenership, everyone who's listening online today, how different would the world be if we developed our youngsters to be leaders from an early age, not midway through their careers, which is the British model, which is the Western model? You become a senior manager in your 40s. You become an executive in your late 40s, if not early 50s. What if we gave the gift of leadership as early as possible, in your teens, in your early 20s? What would that do to your career trajectory? Well, you know, I'm going to answer the question for you. It changes it from that, to a high flyer. If you learn how to lead, what's Africa's biggest problem today? Leadership. And, you know, as we sit here today talking, there is no university on planet Earth that provides a degree in leadership. It's management. And to go back to your initial question, what got me going? I was privileged enough to spend 10 years at Marks & Spencer, one of the best of the British firms at the time. They taught me everything about management and nothing about leadership. I then went onto the board of Pepsi and for 3 years, and they taught me everything about leadership but nothing about management. So I've spent my interim life trying to bring those two things together. And I would say I completely understand the need for management. I teach it on the MSc in management at Cass Business School. I lecture there on the MSc in management. Management is where Africans have become obsessed, and it's not enough on its own. We need leadership. Leadership is something really, really different. And we develop leaders. We train management. Management is IQ. Leadership is EQ. We think management. We feel leadership. Yeah. And the bit I've been doing for the last 20 years, I've been this evangelist for leadership everywhere I go, especially Africa. And let me be really harsh. We're clueless. We're clueless when it comes to leadership because we think the answer is in the book. We always choose the cleverest man in the room.
We do.
And what but, we really need are the leaders. Say, the leaders. Now, there is good news here. There's a new generation coming through.
Yeah.
And this generation, what sets them apart is they've worked, they've lived, they've studied abroad.
Yeah.
And they've come back home. And they've come back home with an urgency, with a passion.
Yeah.
And they're seen as quite rebellious. You know these ones I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're not going to be denied. They're going to do things their way.
Oh, yeah.
And starting businesses, they're making differences. And you know what's really strange? They've eschewed the old traditional practices, the guidance they had from their parents.
They're problem solvers.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they're opportunity seekers. And they're driving things in a way, and they're not afraid to grow their own, to employ local people and give them the opportunity. And that interdependency, that trust, is the part of leadership that I'm talking about.
It's interesting. I was on a webinar yesterday for African entrepreneurs, and it was just a big webinar, and they were talking about what the state of the market, how to raise funds, and fintech in Africa. There were about 1,000 people. Day before yesterday, there was another webinar by a very senior dignitary from Africa, a governor in one of Nigerian states. And he had the Secretary for Trade from the United Kingdom. He had Secretary for Transport. There was only 200 people who joined that webinar. There were about three. And the difference was on the one arranged by entrepreneurs for other people, there was energy. They were very vocal about we need to solve our own problems. The government can't do anything for us. You go on the other one, it's all red tape and it's all boring processes.
Remy, you make a fantastic point. Now, for three and a half years, I was the coach to the president of the African Development Bank out of Abidjan. And Akinsinwa, he's brilliant, brilliant. He used to be the Minister for Agriculture in Nigeria.
Yeah, yes.
He is a privilege to work with one of the best leaders I've worked with. I just finished 5 years coaching the president of the World Bank, Jim Yong Kim. Jim said to me, there's a brother of mine you need to go and help. London to traveling from London twice a month to Ivory Coast, to Abidjan, is not a bag of laughs. Mm. That is not an easy journey.
No.
And I was traveling London, Paris, the pleasures of Charles de Gaulle, which is always a nice four or five hour wait. Air France would then take me into Abidjan. We'd always arrive 2 or 3 hours late. And I worked there. And the intellect in the African Development Bank is astonishing. The ability to execute is nearly non-existent. That's your challenge. Well-intentioned, there to support 55 nations of Africa. They were moving to become increasingly self-funded, so the nations of Africa funding it, with some help from some of the Western governments. Intellects coming out of every pore of the bank. 2,500 people, and if you can't get in unless you've got a degree. You can't be a manager unless you've got a master's. You can't be an exec unless you've got a PhD. What sort of nonsense is that? Does that mean you can build something? Does that mean you can inspire a workforce? Does that mean you're a visionary? Does that mean that you can transform the way things are done today? No, it does not. And that's what you saw yesterday. You saw those who were driven by the process and those who just want to make it happen.
Yes, yes.
And we need to move to the just want to make it happen.
Which is interesting because that brings us back to your book, really, which about Spike, which is about balancing strengths and weaknesses. It's knowing who you are, your essence. And I'm interested by Spike because I read it and I had to read the stories to understand it. And I'll make a plug for everyone here now. And we'll talk about it at the end. The name of the book is Spike, What Are You Great At? Strengths, Positively Identified, Kickstart Excellence. That's what Spike stands for. And I got it off Amazon. It's not for what you get, it is good value. And I'm reading it. And I thought I'd just read it for most of my
podcasts. You're my walking advert. You're my marketing machine. You're my agent. Look.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I wouldn't normally do this, but I read it and I found it fascinating. I actually found it quite engaging. And the stories, because it uses stories, it's easy to read. And one of the things I was struck by was what you talk about balance, which is we all have our essence, what we're good at, but what we always don't realize is you need to counterbalance it with people who've got the opposite, and we've got the other skill. I mean, tell us a bit more about spite.
So this is a great question, Femi, and it's going to take us back to where we started. So one of the issues of formal Western education and formal Western businesses is we expect every individual to be good at everything. When you have your school report from the very early days, every subject, everyone you're marked down on, what happens when you get home? You're going to get blasting.
Oh, you get blasted.
Yes, you are. And you're going to make yourself better at that subject, whether you're gifted, interested, passionate about it or not. Geography, chemistry, and that's how the careers go. You walk into your first big business opportunity, and after a year, you get your first formal management appraisal. And your appraisal is going to look at all the things you're good at, all the things you've done well, and all the things you haven't done so well. And I've had them throughout my career. And the obsession is, of every business, what you're not so good at, your areas for development. When I started my career, they were called weaknesses. Then they became areas for improvement. Then they became areas for development. Today, we call them your limitations.
Mm.
What are your limitations? Now, the obsession of the company, and every appraisal goes something like this, and you'll all recognize it. Renner, you've had a really good year. Here are the two or three things you've done really well. And they tell us that these are your strengths. Can we park those for now? Can we look at the 123 things you're not so good at and you haven't done so well? And we're going to produce a performance development plan, a personal development plan for the rest of the year, where we're going to focus on the 123 things you're not so good at, and we're going to give you opportunities to improve upon those. You're going to come into work every day and work hard on the things you're not so good at. Everyone, I exaggerate a bit to make the point, but everyone recognizes that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
A waste of time. How different would the world be if it went something like this? Rene, here's the two or three things you're really good at. We're really going to focus on those. But before we do, let's look at the 123 things you're not so good at. Okay. There are four or five of them that are going to prevent you succeeding in this business if you don't pick them up. The rest of them, we're going to work hard to ensure there's other people within the team who are really good at doing those things, and we're going to give them to them. Now, let's get back to the two or three things that you're really good at. We want to work with you to make them Olympian standard. We're going to make them your superpowers, because that's where you're going to add the most value to the team, to the business, and most of all, to you. And we've got something I call my spike virtuous circle. The things I tend to be good at are the things I tend to enjoy. The things I tend to enjoy are the things I tend to be really good at. So here's what we do for a career. Go away and find your two or three spikes. Everyone is brilliant at something. No one is brilliant at everything. It's not sensible to think you can be good at everything. What is sensible is to have every member of the team being different and each bringing different spikes to the team. Sports have sorted this out years ago. There's a reason there's a shooter in netball. There's a reason why there's a goalkeeper in football. They don't play centre forward. You don't expect them to score goals. You expect them to save the ball. Why in business, then, can we not focus on building a team where we expose everyone's strengths, not their weaknesses? It is not complex.
It's not. But so now, if I come back now, and I'll say this. We know the world is taking its time coming around to this way of doing things. So for people like me and everyone else out there, our listeners, how can they identify their gifts and on their own start to build on their talent?
Because with consummate ease.
Do it.
With consummate ease. And this is the basis of Spike was to explain this, that every single one of us is born with a gift. And it's not applied. It's not applied learning. It's not geography, chemistry, physics. Forget that. We learn that. Go back much younger. Now, mums are amazing leaders. When I talk about leadership, mothers are the lead, is the model I'm talking about, where emotional intelligence drives everything. How does mum know that all of her charges are very different? How does she know that David's the one to go and do this activity because he's really good at it? How does she know that Janice is the one to go and do this other activity because she's really good? How does she know? How does she know? That is Spike. She knows because she loves you. And she's taken the time to understand that each one of you are different. You're just not employee numbers. You're not job titles. You're not a rank on the corporate hierarchy. You mean something to her. She knows that David has a brilliant memory, forgets nothing. He's good at following through. He gets the task done. She knows Janice is a great starter-upper. She has the big ideas. She can dream. She has a vision. So she gives her tasks accordingly. I'm not saying anything more different to that. So therefore, step number one. Femi, you want to know what you're great at? Don't ask a colleague at work. Go and ask someone who has unconditional love for you. Mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, niece, nephew, grandaunt, someone who's invested in wanting to see you succeed. Now, they're not going to use management language. They're not going to say that you're a natural-born leader. They're not going to say that you're really good at doing appraisals. They're not going to say that you're the feedback king. They're going to say you're generous. They're going to say you're always there for me. They're going to say you're the first one to speak up. You've always got the big idea. You've got eyes in the back of your head. You see things happening before anyone's even anticipated them. And it's your job then is to translate that into what is your spike. And the more of those who love you that you ask, the more you get a cluster of the things you're good at. And believe them. They want the best for you. Don't deny them because you may not see yourself. You may be the last person to know that you have that gift. Now I know what my spikes are. What do I do? I identify opportunities to engage them, to capitalize upon them, and to put them on display. Because when people see the things I'm fantastic at, what does that do for my career? What does that do for my annual appraisal? What does that do for my standing with my team? Most of all, what does it do for me? I'm doing something I'm competent, confident, and really good at. And if I put myself in a position where I'm doing that every day, guess how I perform at work? Guess what happens to my career aspirations? If every day I'm getting up, only doing the things I'm brilliant at. You know what we say? Do a job that you love. You never work a day in your life.
In your life.
This is not complex, Femi.
It's powerful because I remember in my episode 6 of my podcast, because what inspired this for me was, I remember it was one of my birthdays, and a friend from about 20, 30 years ago in boarding school from when I was young rang me up and said, "Oh, Femi, I saw one of your videos on YouTube." And I'm not surprised because even when we were young, you've always loved writing and speaking. So I'm not surprised. And I only just started speaking again after 30 years, about 2 weeks before. And I went, this is someone who's known me years ago. And it's reminding me of something I've loved. And what you say keys into what I tell people is speak to someone who's known you a long time ago. And they'll tell you about the things that just came to you naturally that you used to love to do. And then key into that and find a way to translate it into the workplace. The challenge is for a lot of us is I know some people who are great party planners at home, but they have no idea how to translate that into a career or how that translates into the workplace.
So let me help you. This is what I do. So simplistically, and please don't take this as a touch of irony, it's just a fact. I've never looked like I'm the executive coach of the chief executive, but I am. I've been privileged enough to do chief executive Barclays, chief executive ING Bank, chief executive Zurich Financial Services, chief executive, you name it. I've done them all. I've done the president of the World Bank. I've done the prime minister of Jamaica. I've done the president of Botswana. I've earned the spurs doing the hard yards, all leadership. But there's one thing I look for. And this is what gets me the work, and this is why I stay at the top of my profession. And I'm lucky, and I'll come back to it, because I only use my spikes. My team does the rest. I practice what I preach. But I go in and so when I worked with Jim Yong Kim, president of the World Bank, 16,000 employees around the world. You've got to know, you've got to have the data. You've got to be obsessive about what you're doing. And I'm going in to look after one of the most powerful men on the planet. Within my first 3 interactions with him, I've worked out what his spikes are, and he doesn't know them. I know he's a visionary. He can see around corners. He can anticipate events that are coming 10, 15 years' time, and he's usually correct. I know he's shy. He's an introvert. But he's got to engage with world leaders all over the place on a regular basis. He hates it. I can see he doesn't like confrontation. He likes time on his own to read things through and then prepare himself. And he's a brilliant orator. He's an outstanding communicator, but he's not good at telling people what to do. He lays the vision and wants them to get on with it. He's a visionary, par excellence. He wants to take the bank into a place never been before. He has one gene in his head that he wants to deliver. He wants to end world poverty. That's why he wakes up every day. That's why he breathes. And I'm privileged enough to work with him. He's got 16 direct reports, the illest fits you've ever seen. Every one of them chosen for their intellect. The team doesn't work. It's dysfunctional. They're siloed. They go off and do what they want. They don't listen to what he wants to do. It's my job to change it. And the plan is very simple. I know the two or three things he's brilliant at. I don't need to replicate that in the team. It's all the other things he's not so good at. I need to get them to do. Now, this is not their subject matter expertise stands aside to that. So you will still be the economist. You will still run Africa. You will still run Asia. You will still. But now I need some personal attributes from you. The first thing is I need a super manager. I need someone who's going to get things done. Aha. You're chief operating officer. And you can't manage. We need a chief operating officer that can really manage. The head of IT is a brilliant manager. It took me 3 months to get her to become the chief operating officer. The CFO is completely dysfunctional. He's a geek. He's an expert, works on his own, doesn't share information, and doesn't speak in any meetings, and nobody trusts him. We've got to make a change. We need someone who's more gregarious. The numbers are going all over the place. The president is going to be in difficulties, I don't pull the numbers back in. I don't just need a numbers person. I need someone who can lead on numbers, who's going to communicate numbers, who's going to make numbers the backbone of everything we do without holding people to account, without making them feel guilty. So I'm looking for the personality and the capability. Within 14 months, we had 6 changes, and that team went through the roof. The president of the World Bank used to walk around the building with 3 security guards who were armed. That's how shy he was. That stopped on day 3 of my engagement. He never used to speak to anyone in the lift. He's the president of the World Bank. He couldn't do small talk. But his 2 assistants who worked with him were fantastic at small talk, so they went around with him. So they'd engage people in the lift and introduce him into the conversation. People have different spikes. And there's a Chapter 5 in the book is about the most special person in the world called Shalimar. Shalimar ran Jim's office at the World Bank. She's Puerto Rican. She didn't believe she was good at anything. She had imposter syndrome. She'd worked in big organizations everywhere, and she fixes things. She gets things done. She protected Jim. She was outstanding. But if when I spoke to her, she thought she was a nobody. She thought she was invisible because she'd never been included. I got her to write Chapter 5 in the book. It's an incredible story. At the age of 5, she was bilingual. She was speaking Spanish and English. And her grandmother couldn't speak English. She used to negotiate the rent, the food. At the age of 5, she had a gift. She had spikes. I got her elevated to run the whole office based on her spike. There was nothing she could not get done, and she understood. She knew your intentions when you opened the door. She was just brilliant. And therefore, she was promoted 3 times within 2 years to wish, instead of being the most junior in the office, she became the most senior. Why? She came in every day, utilizing, capitalizing upon her spikes. There are lots of people on this call with hidden gifts, and they may not even know them. And they're trying to live someone else's dream in their career. Let me liberate you. Find out what your spikes are. Base your career on that. Nothing will stop you. The only thing that's going to stop you is you've got to identify an environment where your values and the values of the environment are the same. No point doing it after you've joined. Oh, they don't include me. They don't rate me. They don't involve me. Do that homework before. Find a position that needs your spikes and you will fly.
So here's where you can help us, because that is true. But I find when I speak to people about stuff like this, it always comes down to the dollar. Oh, I need a job that pays me. I need a job that pays me. Help me.
Ben, stop there. Don't take a job that pays you. Do not complain to me again. Every mentee I have this problem. If all you're after is money, I can't help you. If you're not prepared to make some sacrifices for the life you want, then I can't help you. Someone else needs to help you. We've all been in that situation where job X pays twice what job Y pays. I know in job X, they see me as a number. I know they're going to work me really hard. I know no one's going to bother to learn my first name. I'm going to get little development, but I'm going to hit the ground running because I've got the skills they need and they're going to pay me more. I get that. I get that. And for many of us, that's where our career starts because we have commitments. We've got things that we need to pay. But when we're doing that work, let's have a dream. The dream is I'm going to find myself the financial space to go where I'm really wanted. And, you know, this is a true story. The head of race at Barclays, I won't name him, but a great guy. He's got a full-time job. He recognized that race was an issue. He recognized that many of his black colleagues weren't hitting their potential. So he started doing activities on the edge of his desk, trying to give confidence, to run free seminars, to run webinars, and I end up doing a session for them for free because I believe in what he's trying to do. And it goes down really well. After a year or so, Barclays HR notice he's making a difference. And many would say more than the diversity and inclusion team were doing. So they're smart. If someone's doing a fantastic job and it's helping the business, why wouldn't you engage with them? They gave him even more to do. But it was still edge of the desk. He took it on. It was more successful. He had a network that was vibrant. He had a reputation that worked. People believed in him. People trusted him. The more they gave him, the more he did, the more it worked. The more they gave him, the more he did, the more it worked. People weren't looking at where they employed him. They didn't look at his day-to-day job, which was suffering a bit because he was having to work longer and longer hours on the in what he believed in and where he was making a difference. Before long, the word got out, and some of the rival banks heard about him. You know where I'm going with this. And before you know it, they offer him the amazing job for his day to day. But during the interview process, they say to him, we want to formalize your edge of desk activity. We're having challenges around race. We love the fact the technical stuff you're doing, but to be honest, the race stuff is where we really need your help.
That's where it's at.
So the conversation he had, and this is to go back to your sacrifice, he said, formalize it then. Make it part of my day to day. Measure me on it. Reward and recognize me on it. And they said, you know what? That's exactly what we're going to do. So he resigns. The backlash at Barclays, because what was misinterpreted was, why did he resign? Was it he doesn't believe in what they're doing in race? Right? That's what came as the backlash. Because they hadn't grasped the nettle, the opportunity they had. He's playing to his spikes. And his spike is that he's authentic. He has a coaching demeanor. People trust him. They help him. He works hard at what he does. He's got a young family. He needs to do both. He needs to be compensated appropriately because he has commitments. But he wants to make a difference. That's what he really, that's where his heart is. His new employees has made his role 50-50. And they're saying to him, and you know what? We don't know which way your career is going to go. Help us choose. We'll sponsor you if you want to do race. We'll sponsor you if you want to stay in the technical function. Okay? Find your spike, embrace your spike, and do not be afraid. There's sacrifice everywhere. But you know what? Never lose your dream. Focus on that dream and make it happen. And look, I've had to be in a situation where I was doing, to get through university, I had to do three jobs. My parents couldn't afford to pay for me to get to university. I was the first in my family to go, first in my extended family to go. And, you know, no, three simultaneous jobs. university was fantastic to me because when I went back in to say I had to leave, they said, what? I can't afford it. You know, I can't afford it. My parents had gone back to Gambia. I had two brothers to look after. I couldn't afford it. The university gave me an extra year to go and work my nuts off for a year, earn enough money to come back and finish my degree. There is always a way.
There's always a way.
No, that's true. And I think what I get from that as well is if you still don't understand, if you're still putting money above everything, you haven't got it yet. You haven't quite figured out that money is not about the money and it pays off in the long term to focus on your spike.
Femi, you're right. But, you know, that's a tough message for some people. So I would say
it is.
And I would say, look, do you know, some of us come from the most humble of origins. And we don't have so, you know, I was at a dinner party the other day. I was at a dinner party in Chiswick. And everyone's talking about working from home. And there was two women who were doing the catering, two black women doing the catering, Caribbean women. And the food was just to die for. It was fantastic. Service, amazing. They were talkative, they explaining dishes. But most of the guests at the dinner, to most of the guests at dinner, they were invisible. To me, they're part of who I am. They're where I come from. And people talk about, I don't want to go back to work. I'm quite fine working from home. Thank you very much indeed. Well, you would be with your four-bedroom house, your study with three PCs and an Apple Mac in, and you've got broadband to die for. So just when we were leaving, I said to the team, I said, excuse me, that was the most amazing meal. Tell me about yourselves. Whereabouts do you live? And one of them laughed and said, I wish we had the option to work from home. She said, I have four children, two bedrooms. My fellow guests, their heads sunk. We should never forget to walk in the shoes of those who are less well off than we are. And they have to make sacrifices every day. Now, I know for some people on this call, they're the breadwinner. They've got to pay the electricity bill. They've got to pay, get the kids to school. They've got to put food on the table. And a job that pays X thousand more than another is irresistible. But that doesn't mean if you take that job, you don't continue the dream. I'm working on my spikes. I know what I'm going to be really good at. And at some stage of the game, I need to make a sacrifice for myself, my family, and my future.
You come to a fork in the road.
Correct. Earn that fork in the road. Earn that fork in the road. Do the extra hours. But if you wake up every day with a dream, you know, hope is so much harder than despair. It's easier to wake up with despair. Keep that dream alive. That'll fuel you. That'll oxygenate you. This is what our leaders should be doing. Enabling every one of us to have a dream. Help them with that dream. And, you know, I spend half my time championing, sponsoring, advocating, opening doors for others. I'm of that vintage now that I've got a network. I've got the dream. I can do the stuff. And, you know, and I suppose my daughter did a PR degree at the London University of Arts. All through the summer, the last year on the summer, her and her five friends, they used our house because it was near to the campus. They used our house in the summer to come and work on the terrace. We've got broadband everywhere. There's laptops and they did all their coursework there. It got to a stage where they need to get themselves internships. And I watched this. Six girls. Four of them, young women of colour. Two of them, white British. And they were a really strong, moulded team. They worked together. They sent off hundreds and hundreds of applications and letters. Nothing. Nothing. I could feel the desperation. Two of them ended up going back to their countries of birth because they just gave up. They thought, we're never going to get the chance here. They went and did internships. One went to Turkey, one went to Italy. They went back and did them in their... Anyway, I whispered to my daughter one day. I said, why don't I make a phone call? I've been dreaming of making this phone call for my children. My parents couldn't do it. I've got a network. I can get an internship in... 30-second phone call. My clients, my colleagues, my friends. I got an international network. I know a bunch of, probably know more chief executives than probably anyone else in London. And she said, what do you mean a phone call? I said, well, let me talk to one of my colleagues. I know someone who owns the largest technology PR agency in the world. I know the chief executive. Dad, you're not giving me the opportunity. I'm going to get it on my own. Please don't do anything. Leave it to me. I choked. This was one of my dreams. This was what, as the son of immigrants, this was what I wanted to do. I wanted to level playing field. I want to make the phone call. I want to have the network.
Yeah. Anyway,
she sent off nothing. I called my friend. His wife is chief executive of Text 100. They're the largest technology PR agency in the world. They're in 22 countries. They look after Apple, Google. They look after Lenovo. They look after Cisco. They've got everyone. And I say to him, do you think your wife could get my daughter interned? He said, yeah, which city does she want? Where does she want to work? You know, who would have thought we could have had these conversations? Anyway, I say London. I said, but do me a favor. My fingerprints can't be anywhere around here. Wipe everything clean. The following Monday, the phone rings. We're sitting out having breakfast and the phone rings. And my daughter answers the phone, and she puts the phone and says, Dad, I've got to fly. Someone's had an intern drop out in Holborn. They're called Text 100. They want me for an interview now. Now, within the next hour, bang, she's gone. I'm sitting there biting my lips, sitting on my hands as though I've got to play as though I know nothing about this. She came and said, Dad, you'll never believe it. They said that I'm on their shortlist. They really like me. They've got another person to see. I've got a real chance of getting the excitement. On Friday, she gets called for another interview. She goes for the interview. She comes back. She gets the job. She's an intern. I'm acting like I know nothing. They take her on. They pay her nothing. She works for 6 weeks, really long hours, working weekends. And I'm wondering whether I've messed this all up. But she's loving it. After 6 weeks, they say to her, I want to give you an extra 6 weeks. We're going to pay you. After 3 months, they ask for her to stay for another 6 months and pay her. They guarantee her a job after she finishes her last year of university. I say nothing. I'm taking this secret to the grave with me. She finishes university. I say to her, so, Text 100. She said, no, Dad. I've done that. I've had that experience. I want to go and find somewhere else on my own. I said, but they've offered you a job. Yeah, Dad, but I've had that experience. I want to experience something else, something different. I still want to do PR. I want to do something different. Now, the moral of that story, she is the daughter I want her to be. But where we started this, I had the dreams of the colonialist. It's up to me to fix what my daughter does. No, it's not. I'm chief supporting actor. I've got to create the environment where she has the confidence to be who she wants to be. I've got to provide her with the resources so she can do what she wants to do. The fact that I had to make the initial phone call, she shouldn't be aware of that, because that gives her a culture of entitlement. I've got to be careful. We lost her mother many, many years ago. So Dad's bringing up the kids on his own, and I'm having to learn how to do some things that maybe with my wife, we would have done it differently. We would have done it together. But when I sat back, it took my friends to say to me, don't be frustrated. You should be proud of her. You've given her the conditions for confidence, to back herself, to stick to a dream and do what's right. Now, that's a long-winded story, Femi, but I hope it makes sense for our listeners today.
It does. You said something about change, and I want to come back to this, because we're in 2021. The world is what it is with the pandemic and everything. And in your book, you talk a lot about change can be hard on hope. Now, a lot of us are hopeful. We came into the year feeling hopeful, but this darn pandemic has still made things really tough. And I'd like you to just give a word of encouragement or really kind of speak to people, help them figure out how to find their way through this pandemic, because the change is real. I mean, for some of us, we're at home, we're working from home. You said it, but there's some people who are genuinely impacted by this. How do people find it mentally? How do they just work their way through this?
So look, this is a great question, and let's get to the nub of this. What the pandemic has done, it has looked at it's raised the underskirts of our society. And we're seeing now in sharp relief and very acutely those who have been marginalized, those who are underprivileged, those who have put a brave face on every day and gone into work and done what's been needed to done with no recognition and little reward. We know that many are key workers. They don't have the option of working for home. They have to go in every day, no matter what the elements. They're not massively recognized. They're not massively rewarded. We saw the clapping for the NHS, clapping for our heroes. That was the beginning of an understanding, but that doesn't help them more than recognition. So the bit I see, at least when I go into work, I've got some colleagues who are in a similar boat and we look out for each other. But sometimes I'm isolated at home now. I'm not able to mix with anyone. Does anyone know the troubles I see? Look at the environment I'm having to work in to make this work. I'm having to log on to Zoom at 8:30 in the morning, and I feel too guilty to even go and have a coffee. I'm stuck on Zoom all the way through to sometimes 8:30 at night. I'm not sure this was the life I signed up for. Does anyone know that I'm struggling? I'm finding this, I'm getting anxiety. I'm feeling isolated. I'm feeling depressed. I'm finding it really hard to wake up to do another full Zoom day. So here's what I'm advising my clients to do. Look out for each other. Look after each other. Look out for each other. Look after each other. And that phone call with no agenda, no to-do list, not progress chasing. I'm calling out for one of my colleagues. I'm calling out for one of my friends. I'm calling out for one of my family just to ensure they're okay. And I'm just going to have a 5-minute chat with you about anything and nothing and everything. But I want you to know that I'm there. I want you to know that I care. I want you to know that should you get lonely, isolated, text me. I'm there for you. I'll call you. We live on a road with there's 7 houses on the terrace. And because of where we live, all my neighbours are Jewish. We're the only non-Jewish family. And they're a very, very different strains of from Orthodox to unorthodox to fully Orthodox. South African Jew, Nigerian Jew, British Jew, Turkish Jew. Strangely, none of them speak to each other, but they all speak to me and my kids. So a couple of them have no next of kin. Our job has been to ensure that we knock the doors. Because of social distancing, I have to talk to a couple of them through the door. But I just want them to know that I'm there. I just want them to know that someone cares. I just want them to know that should anything happen, I'm just there. It's not much, but it's something. If every single one of us took a moment just to look out for someone, look after someone, we change the game.
So care about focus on others.
Femi, you know where we were born, where we come from?
Yeah.
You could never be lonely.
No.
You just couldn't define that loneliness. In the atmosphere and the environments and the neighbourhoods and the culture that we grew up in, people are in and out of each other's houses every day. People are talking to each other's kids every day. That's not the culture we have here. So we have to go out of our way. And I implore everyone, I beg everyone, look out for someone, look after someone. We change the dynamic, and we can do that. That doesn't need rocket science. It doesn't need a grant. It just needs us.
Fantastic. It's really around... It's not about you. It's about others. Love others. Care about others.
Take the focus. And they will love my children.
Yes. Yes. There's one more thing before I let you go. I was reading through the book, and one of the things you said was, because you work around dignitaries, high achievers, and for a lot of us, we get to come when that moment we stand before kings, that moment where we all have a chance to impress, to take the next level in our career, we stand before CEOs or whoever. And managing yourself, your demeanor, and is very important. One of the things you said was you saw them as a person, a compassionate person, and that helps you manage them and you don't get overawed. I mean, talk to us a bit around how we ourselves, when we get around people who are high achievers and we have a chance to pitch ourselves and just show our spikes and tell them about our spikes. How do we manage that moment?
This is a great question, an insightful question. I think step number one, know who you are. This is a bit more than your spikes. It's know who you are. There was a time when we would be trained to be this particular person in front of leaders, influential people, you would change what you wore. You'd have a different haircut. You'd use different words. You'd different. That doesn't work. You need to be the best you that you can be. The authentic you. And no one plays you better than you. So play you.
Amen.
But put the best you can find on display. So for me, I realize that when opportunities present themselves, I'm just going to play to my spikes. And look, I've had 20-odd performance appraisals in my career. It's hard to argue when they all say the three spikes I've had from day one. They've always been the same damn thing. No matter what I try and do, no matter where I try and shift it, over the year, they find the three same things. It's hard for me to argue. At some stage of the game, I better start believing that. And the first spike is he can do the big picture. He's really good at the visionary piece, the big picture. He can communicate a bit. He's the best communicator on the team. He's by far the most enthusiastic and passionate on the team. They're my three spikes. The big picture can communicate and the most passionate and energized on the team. So when I left corporate life in 2000, I was on the board of IPC Magazines. We did a management buyout, the 10 of us on the board. We bought the business, sold the business 3.5 years later, and I retired. Allegedly. Mm. It lasted a week before my wife threw me out to get back to work. And I needed to find a role that could capitalize upon those three spikes. The big picture, communicate, energize. As part of my deal to leave IPC Magazines, the chairman wanted me to stay for a year's gardening leave, and I wanted 6 months to leave, so we cut a deal. He said he had a lot of external talks to do. I wrote this story in Spikes. If I was prepared to do those talks for him, he'd cut my gardening leave to 6 months so I could go and work, including the competition. The big thing was he didn't want me to work for the competition. So I could leave in 6 months. So I started doing the talks. What is it the big talks needed? The big picture, communicate a bit, and to be really, really passionate and enthusiastic. Yeah. I found I could do them without rehearsal. They played to my strengths. And it was the platform I'd been looking for. It was just natural. And I don't have to memorize. I just know it. It just came to me. And I didn't hit the ground running. I was Usain Bolt. There was nothing I could not do in front of an audience. But I never for once realized you could be paid for doing it. When I got my first paid gig for doing the three things I do best, I then realized if I want to make this a career, I'd better put a team around me. They need to do all the things I'm not so good at. All the things that are painstaking, need someone who's really careful, need someone who's great with the numbers, need someone who's following through, need someone who's going to do the preparation, need someone who's going to do the digital. So my team do all of that, and every single day of my life, I wake up to do the three things I'm brilliant at. I'm useless at so many other things. But when I walk into the executive suite, I'm going to coach a chief executive, there's three things I better be good at. And I am. Anything else, I take my team members with me and they do it. Yeah. I'm the living spike. And I remember the last bit of feedback I got from my chief executive at Pepsi. He said, you're now at the stage where you need to focus on making your spikes spikier. Wow. So take them, fine-tune them. Don't go and try and fix the things you're not so good at. You've got them to a level where they're okay. Now focus. I don't take on a job that doesn't play to my spikes. I just won't. If it plays to my spikes, I don't. Whenever there's a tender, I can be up against McKinsey, Accenture. I never lose them. Because I'm putting my three spikes on display. Mm. It feels good to do the things every day that you're brilliant at. It feels good to not have to taste failure. It feels good to be at the top of my profession every day. But I made the sacrifice. I made the choice. You use the word balance. I'd use a different word. I don't balance my weaknesses with my strengths. My team compensate my weaknesses. Every single day without fail, I do the three things I know I do brilliantly. My areas for development, my areas for improvement, my limitations, my team chew those up every day.
Because that's their own spike. So you've got spikes working together.
You've nailed it. They eat those up every day because they're brilliant at it. Guess how my team operates? And as I say, great players don't win trophies. Great teams win trophies. Join a team that needs you. Not wants you, needs you.
Needs you.
Needs, and then you do the one. So, you know, and I quote Kipling, the day of lone wolves are over. The strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack.
That's fantastic. What a way to end this. I was going to ask you one more question. If you were to, what book do you gift people the most? Or what book, to end on a light note, or what book do you, what's the one book you would say, guys, go out there, other than Spike, go out there and read that for you, the penny dropped or it helped. What gift would you gift someone?
Simple, simple, simple. The 1 Minute Manager.
Ah, Ken Blanchard. 1 Minute
Manager. You'll read it in 20 minutes. Transformational. Transformational. And it's just, you'll pick up, every one of you will pick up 5 or 6 things that would change your life forever. Incredible.
I recommend that. Ken Blanchard, the 1 Minute Manager.
Ken has been a friend for years, and Spencer Johnson's been a friend for years, was the late Spencer, but fabulous. It is the book that made it clear for so many of us, set us all on the path.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, Renee.
It's my pleasure. And look, to all of your guys, look, there's a great Zambian quotation. A candle loses nothing when it lights another candle. Okay. Good leaders create followers. Great leaders create leaders. The role of everyone on this call is, you can be a leader today. It's an attitude. It's a mindset. It's a behavior. It's not a set of skills. It's a mindset. Your step number one, think of the model I've spoken to you about, is mothers at home. They're the best leaders we've ever seen. They have no job title. They have not been to university to learn those skills. But that emotional intelligence, that knowing who is good at what and making everyone feel trusted, everyone feel empowered, everyone part of something special, is what we're talking about. And the final piece, a candle loses nothing by lighting another candle. Look out for each other. Look after each other. Look out for each other. Look after each other. We change the world to a better place.
Amen. Thank you so much, Renee, for coming aboard. It's been an absolute, absolute pleasure. I am going to start working hard to get you on here again just to download some more wisdom and greatness. But it's been such a pleasure to leave everyone with a clear idea of how to unleash your spikes and become your best you and make it a life where you can look back and say, I emptied the vessel. I was the best I could be because I looked out for others. I knew my strengths and I complimented myself with others who knew their strengths. Get unleashed, stay unleashed.